Well, finally today, as the Religion and Ethics Report comes to you from Rome, and a conference held by Georgetown and Notre Dame universities on the persecution of Christian and other religious minorities, let's join Mustafa Akyol. He's a leading Turkish journalist, an opinion writer for the New York Times and the Turkish Hurriyet Daily News. Mustafa Akyol's also the author of Islam Without Extremes, a Muslim case for liberty, in which he calls for Muslim liberalism. So in a world where ordinary Muslims are as much the target of Islamic extremists as other minorities, is liberal Islam the answer?
Well, religious persecution is a global problem, and Christians are persecuted in sometimes Muslim-majority countries, sometimes in communist regimes, or even in Buddhist Burma, they're persecuted. Sometimes they're persecuted side by side with Muslims, like the Burmese regime persecutes both Christians and Muslims. But as a Muslim, I am worried about the persecution of Muslims in my part of the world, which is the Muslim world. There are severe problems in countries like Saudi Arabia, Iran, Sudan, Afghanistan, and a few others, which implement Islamic law as they understand it, and which has some injunctions that are against religious freedom. And I think these injunctions do not come directly from the Quran, but from the medieval interpretations of it. And we should renew them, we should revisit them, and we should grant full religious freedom to everybody.
Yes, the old argument now about the sort of Islamic reformation. You've written about this. You think that that's the wrong way to look at it. And don't look, for example, at Martin Luther and the Christian Reformation. You think of a great English philosopher.
Indeed, that Luther analogy has been made a lot, which is not exactly accurate. First of all, the problem we have at hand is not a central Islamic authority like the Catholic Church in the Middle Ages, which doesn't allow different interpretations. No, we don't have a central Islamic authority, and actually that's maybe a problem in itself. It's actually a chaos. It's actually already a Protestant world in the sense that there are different groups having their own traditions.
I mean, you can't go to one mosque and nail your thesis to the door, can you?
Yeah, that sounds poetic, but that's not what we exactly need. And also, let's not forget that the Protestant Reformation did not necessarily start an era of religious liberty and freedom and openness in Europe. Some Protestants were also very oppressive against heretical Protestants and so on and so forth. What we need is the era of enlightenment. And by enlightenment, I don't mean the French enlightenment, which was generally hostile to religion. I mean the kind of more Anglo-Saxon way, which came through thinkers like John Locke, indeed, who emphasized that we need freedom as the basis of religiosity. You shouldn't coerce people, you shouldn't oppress people in the name of religion, because you should leave that judgment to God. Not because you don't believe in God, but you accept that religion should flourish on the basis of freedom and not on the basis of authoritarianism. We need that in the Islamic world. So we need a religion-friendly enlightenment. Are there ideas? Yes. Are there people who are already articulating these messages? Yes, but we need more of that. And it's a huge world to transform. I mean, if you look at the Islamic world. I'm doing my part as much as I can by writing on these issues. There are many other valuable Islamic thinkers, scholars who argue for religious freedom, but it's a challenge. And of course, there are on the other side, there are these extremists like ISIS, which is the most extreme case. But even in countries like Saudi Arabia, they still think that, yes, you should oppress people in the name of religion. That's what religion is. So that battle within the Muslim world is going on. But the people who make the news and headlines in the West are generally the most horrifying people in our part of the world.
You are certainly doing your part, and I commend your columns in the New York Times. As you look out, though, at the religious leaders, Christian leaders from the Middle East, they're looking at their communities under siege. I'm wondering what you say to them about a Muslim statehood model that you think works.
Honestly, I don't look for Islamic states. I look for states for Muslims and others. And I actually am sympathetic to the idea of a secular state. In Turkey, we do have a secular state. It's not perfect. It is secular in the sense that it doesn't implement religious law. It doesn't implement Sharia. I mean, and actually, most pious Muslims in Turkey are okay with that. They don't want a religion police coming and checking whether they're praying or fasting. They want to do it out of their own conviction. And many Muslims are feeling that this is a better model than us, and the demand in Turkey for a so-called Islamic State is less than 10%, although many Turks are pious Muslims. Mm. And actually, they enjoy that freedom of choice that they have regarding, you know, their religiosity.
I mean, you've been a great defender, of course, of the notion of the secular state. I've got to say, though, you do evince some concern about events in Turkey, the autocratic direction that President Erdogan is pushing the country.
I do have concerns about the authoritarianism that is growing under President Erdogan. That is less of a Islamic authoritarianism, though. That's more of a cult of personality and a leader who doesn't like to be criticized, kind of. I mean, our president doesn't pass laws about imposing Sharia. He puts more religion into the public space, for sure. He builds mosques and speaks a religious language. But he doesn't like to be criticized. And through some different channels, he got a lot of journalists who criticize him and lose their jobs. Now, that's not an Islamic problem. That's a ego problem. That's a, you know, patrimonial authoritarianism problem that you find in different parts of the world. So, yes, in Turkey, I do have problems with that specific issue, freedom of speech and the lack of free press and the pressure put on the media by the powerful, especially the current president. But still, in Turkey, we do have a society in which you can choose to go to the mosque or the nightclub, as I always say. And I think that's a healthy choice. That's a healthy choice for the pious people, too, because they go to the mosque out of their own conviction, which is the only way to do it out of your own conviction.
Yes, that religion cannot be coerced. Yeah. And indeed, many Muslim scholars say that is one of the principles of Islam. It cannot be coerced.
There is a verse in the Quran which says, let there be no compulsion in religion, and every Islamic scholar would tell you. But then they would say, yes, but actually this can be coerced. Actually, this is not what exactly it means. And actually, they sometimes put a parenthesis in that verse. When you put parentheses, it reads, there is no compulsion in the acceptance of religion. So the argument is that you won't be forced to enter Islam, but if you enter, you can't leave. And when you enter, you have to be doing every practice, and somebody should be checking that, the religion police idea. Whereas I think that only breeds hypocrisy, and it developed at a time when you had more communities, very, very homogeneous communities in the Middle Ages. But now in the open world of today, you can't coerce individuals. And if you do that, you create reaction, you create hypocrisy, you don't achieve anything.
Look, finally, much of the concern right now in the worldwide debate concerns Syria. You have written about Turkey's relationship with Syria. What is your view about the appropriate role that Turkey needs to be taking in Syria? Because there's a lot of conspiracy theory, but also a lot of fact about, is Erdogan really pressing that hard for the end of ISIS?
Turkey, since the early stage of the Syrian conflict, believed that the Assad regime should be toppled, and when you do that, Syria will have democracy. It was not something ill-willed, but events have shown that it's not that simple. Assad regime is a brutal tyranny, but then you had ISIS, which is even a bigger problem for the whole world. So Turkey had to adjust its Syrian policy, and belatedly maybe it's doing so now. I don't think that Turkish government supports ISIS, as some people claim, as Russian President Putin claimed. That's, I think, not true. Turkey is becoming alert. I mean, it was just a belated recognition that ISIS is a major problem on our borders. What we need in Syria right now is actually a ceasefire, an end to the blood and the killing. It's not the toppling of Assad regime. It's just an end to violence. That should be the number one issue. And for that, every actor involved, from Iran to Russia to Saudis to U.S. to Qatar to France, should come to a consensus and should force their proxies on the ground to halt fire, to cease fire, and then some negotiation, some maybe even a division of the country. But stopping the murder is the number one thing. The problem is that people have other priorities. And of course, destroying ISIS is, because ISIS is not going to make peace with you. So ISIS needs to be fought with. But other actors should be forced to have a ceasefire so we can start to rebuild Syria.
Mustafa Akyol, an opinion writer with the New York Times, also with Al Monitor and Hurriyet Daily News. Mustafa's latest book is Islam Without Extremes, A Muslim Case for Liberty. Thank you for being with us on this special edition of the program from Rome.
It is my pleasure. I look forward to next time.
And that's where we leave the first edition of the Religion and Ethics Report for 2016. Thanks to our producer, Nadiet Al-Ghouli, executive producer, Jane Jeffs, and technical producer, Lila Schunner. And thanks to our friends from Radio Vatican here in Rome for their technical help. I'm Andrew West. Back next week.